Ahoy, and welcome to the Jolly Reader. I'm your host, Captain Book. So we're starting part two, my part two, because there's part two in the book. For you watching the video, there's Patchy back there. We're going to be doing chapters 17 through 36, pages 138 through 302. I totally posted wrong on social media. I said chapter 19 that we went through. We definitely did not, but I'll fix it, whatever.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
So, summary of last episode. Pip's losing her freaking brain. There's dead crows and stick figures on her driveway. She's also getting messages from an unknown number, and they are saying, who will look for you when you're the one that goes missing? And there's a serial killer that did the same things to five other girls? I can't remember. Anyway, and the guy in jail accused of them seems innocent. That's Billy. Anyway, things to look forward to, really all you need to know, is we find out who DT is. Like, if that's not enough to look forward to, I don't know what it is. Okay, let's start with chapter 17. So Pip talks about how she thinks Billy is likely innocent, which we kind of, like, we went over the, sorry, it's been a while. Like, I've read a lot since then. We went over the police records where Billy, like, basically was coerced, whatever, you guys know what I'm saying, into a confession. So she also talks about Capstone Project Log 20. In the first book, which I have not looked up yet, but I'm assuming it's accurate to what we're talking about here. But it's an interview with Jess Walker. They don't give any details about it, but I kind of want to, like, pause and look it up real quick. Maybe I'll do that at the end. Maybe I'll, like, add something in the end. Hi, hello. So I looked up the Capstone Logic Project 20 or whatever, Log 20. It's transcript of interview with Jess Walker. I have it in front of me right now. This is kind of crazy that she referenced back to this in the third book, but doesn't give details. So Jess is describing the Bell family, specifically Jason, and says, like, the whole family is dysfunctional, et cetera, et cetera. But she says, like, the way he spoke to the girls, he would, like, talk down to them, and then he'd, like, make a joke about it. So he'd joke about Becca's weight, and then he'd say, like, Andy needed makeup and stuff, and then the mom, like, used to be prettier, whatever, who cares. But something that really stuck out to me was this part on page 144 of the first book, and I'm just going to read it. It just says, where'd it go? How that girl, they're talking about Andy, how that girl could have ever thought she was ugly is beyond me. Becca became obsessed with her flaws and started skipping meals. It affected them in different ways. Andy got louder and Becca got quieter. Keep that in mind because the louder part comes back later. I do want to say also, this chapter mentions, or this capstone log mentions, that part of the story where Jason had to leave the dinner party to go check on an alarm at his business. So that's what leads Pip to this next section. Okay, I'm done. Back to my regular recorded show. So Pip goes to the Bell's house and she's walking up the door and she passes Dawn. That's the mom. But Dawn doesn't really acknowledge her and just, like, leaves. It's kind of weird. But then Pip goes to the door and Jason, the dad, answers. And Jason's not really having it this whole time, but, like, neither would I if this was a situation. Like, leave me alone. You've already meddled enough in my life. But anyway, she asked about the DT killer working at his company, because if you remember from last time, like, all the signs pointed to being connected to the company. Like, one of the managers died, one of the bodies was found on there, and then, like, the duct tape and the blue rope could be accessed through the job. So anyway, he's like, we've done everything to separate the company from this situation, so, like, leave. And Pip brings up the dinner party the night Andy died and the break-in at the office that Jason had to leave for. And she's like, I think DT broke in to get supplies for the murder. And she's like, did your office have cameras? And he's like, I didn't see anything, because, like, he left to go check on it. And then he, like, kind of cuts himself off mid-sentence, and he's like, that's enough. You caused enough damage. Like, don't contact me again. So then Jason slams the door and watches to make sure Pip, like, fully leaves his property. And then she conveniently gets an unknown number call, like she has been, as soon as she turns the corner. And Pip asks a bunch of questions. She's like, DT, do I know you? Do you know me? Like, obviously there's no response. They're just breathing, and then a click. And then as this is all happening, Pip's walking across the street and a car almost hits her. It, like, she's, like, on the crosswalk, and then it, like, flies by. And she sees Layla Mead. No, it's Stella. Okay. I like this book series, but there's a lot I don't like about this book. So it's just trying to bring everything back around one last time in the book. Like, so they talk about Jamie and how, like, she catfished the second book. Whatever. If you've been with me, you know what I'm talking about. It's not worth going over again. But anyway, the car is, like, I think Stella says this. It's a white sports car. Whatever. They chit-chat about college. It's stupid. But while they're talking, Pip's having an internal breakdown thinking about Charlie Green and everything that happened in the last book. It's just to, like, tie everything together, but for my purposes, pointless. Chapter 18. So Ravi's upset about the car almost hitting her and the phone call, obviously, from unknown. And Pip's like, I got a plan. So she installs an app that reveals who the call is from. So back in my day, we would just, like, star 69, which call back the number that called your house phone. So I'm assuming there is an app that can do this, but also, what? So, like, what happens is, well, Ravi tests it out, but, like, you can hit, I forget what numbers, whatever, two numbers, and it'll, like, hide your phone number and make it seem like it's unknown. And then she'll use the app, and the app will reveal who's, like, the actual phone number. So they try it, and it works. So Pip also explains how everyone in the town has her phone number because she put it on the missing posters for Jamie, so that doesn't, like, rule anyone out. Like, it doesn't have to necessarily be someone she knows well. And then Ravi thinks Pip's an idiot and should go to the police. This is going to be a reoccurring theme this whole episode. But she wants to get the name or, like, the number from the caller ID before she goes to the police, so she can be like, I have evidence, this is who's calling me. So they talk about the criminal profiler and how it basically rules out Max because he was only 17 the night of the first murder. And the one that was the same day that Andy was missing, he was obviously having that sleepover with his friends. So, like, he had enough going on. It probably wasn't him. So then they bring up Daniel Da Silva would fit the profile. And he worked at Green Scene before he became a police officer. And this is stupid. Pip tries to contact people that worked with Daniel and Billy. This never comes back around, at least not in this section of the book. We still have a third left, but still. Then she also wants to talk to the retired, now retired, Lieutenant Noel. And he did the police interview with Billy, which we get to later. Pip reaches out and gets a response from Julie, who's, I have third victim question mark. I think I clarify later. One of the victim's sisters, Harriet. And Harriet says she can meet up tomorrow, next chapter, to talk with Pip. Chapter 19. So Pip meets Harriet at the cafe and sets up the podcast stuff and all that. And she asks Harriet about the interview we talked about last episode, like Billy's interview. And Harriet said at the time they did have two dead pigeons at their house, one through, like, a cat flap door, but she was pretty sure, like, their house cat was too old and didn't hunt anymore. Oh, P.S. talking about house cats. Today is Waffle's 10th birthday, and this is, like, so side note. Get over it. normally, I buy him a kid's junior roast beef sandwich from Arby's. We have 7 inches of snow right now, so I don't think he's gonna get it, or I'm gonna have to DoorDash, so. But happy birthday, Waffle. Anyway, so her cat's too old to hunt, and she didn't see the birds, but her sister did say the second one was headless. So same as what's going on with Pip. And then Harriet didn't see the chalk figures either. It's all just things her sister told her. The blocked numbers, Harriet said she thinks her sister maybe got 3 calls the week she was murdered. And then Harriet also mentions that Billy never said anything about stalking in the interview, in the things he confessed to. Harriet tells us her sister didn't have a boyfriend at the time, but she was going out for dinner a lot, so that could be sus, she could be seeing someone. And there's also no phone records between her and Billy. But there's, enough freaking burner phones in this book that, we know that's probably the case. So Harriet, get ready for a bombshell. Harriet also mentions that Andy Bell, would ask the same question that Pip just did. Yeah, Andy. Here we go. After Julia died, Harriet received an email from Andy, basically saying, if you ever need someone to talk, you can talk to me. I have a little sister, et cetera, et cetera. And they talked on the phone once a week, and they actually would meet up at the same coffee shop every once in a while. And they would talk about anything and everything, but also Julia and DT Killer. Also, it's noted that when Andy died the same night as Tara Yates, which we already knew, but it's just something that's brought up. And then Harriet also gives the email address that Andy used, but it's a bunch of numbers and letters. It's not her normal, Andy Bell at Gmail or whatever. And Harriet reads one of the messages to Pip. And then Andy signs off the message, or not signs off, but she calls Harriet HH. That's Harriet's initials. We'll get to that in a minute, but it's something that sticks out to Pip. And then Harriet asks if Pip's going to talk to Billy, and she says hopefully, which we don't get to yet, but I would assume that happens eventually. I don't know. We'll see. But Pip wants to schedule another interview with Harriet soon, so they say their goodbyes, which that doesn't happen this time either. So then we look at Andy's planner folder, March 10th through the 16th. On Saturday, it says HH at 6. I can post a picture, page 164. Chapter 20. So Pip thought initially that HH, in the first book, was in Andy's planner meant Howie's house, because she was obviously selling drugs. And now we know it's because she was meeting Harriet. But what's obviously strange is that Andy wanted to meet one of DT Killer's victims' family members. So Pip tries to log into Andy's email, the one that she used to contact Harriet, but it's kind of drawn out, but it basically comes down to a security question. What is the name of your first hamster? Mine was Hammy, just for the record. Not one of my security questions, though. Anywho, Pip always has a call with Becca weekly. I don't know why I said last episode that they talk daily, but they definitely talk weekly. Anyway, they're scheduled to talk on the phone tomorrow, in the book, at 4 p.m., which is 25 hours away. So Pip's freaking out because she thinks she only has a week left to live because she's already received a certain number of calls, the same as the victim, blah, blah, blah. So Pip starts having another panic attack with the blood on her hand. So she takes a pill, whatever. Then she texts Luke saying she needs more, and he mocks her, and he's like, oh, I thought you said this last time. I'll tell you when I have them or whatever. And Pip's thinking about going for a run, but she sees Max jogging outside, and then all of this is interrupted by a phone call. It's not the no caller ID, which we'd all hope for, but it is a number she doesn't know. She answers it, turns out to be Detective Hawking, and he tells her that Charlie Green was caught and he's in custody and he was in Canada. So she knows it wasn't him because he was in Canada the whole time. Detective Hawking is trying to reassure her that she's safe now. You don't have to worry about it. And she's like, can I talk to Charlie? And he's like, no, you idiot. You're the only eyewitness to the murder he committed. That's a problem when we go to court. No. So then Hawking's trying to be nice. And he's like, so how's your stalker situation? And Pip's like, it's all sorted out. Don't worry about it. Which is not, but whatever. And she's like, thanks for your call. So, like I said, obviously it's not Charlie because he was in Canada. We knew that already, though. So I did put a note in this. I said, unless he was in contact with someone else that lived there that could make the chalk marks and stuff. But, we find out who DT is. So, I'm an idiot. So the chapter ends by Pip saying that she has 24 and a half hours to solve the mystery of Andy's email. And maybe after all this time, Andy can save her. Big who cares. Chapter 21. So Becca calls Pip from the prison, and long story short, Pip's like, what's the name of your first hamster or whatever? And Becca's like, why? And then Pip's like, there was a secret email account. And Becca's like, I think the police would find all this stuff or whatever. And Pip's like, I can't tell you more on the phone. Calls are recorded through the jail, whatever. So they give her the name of the hamster. It's Rhodey. And there's this whole family story about it. Who cares? So they get off the phone, and I'm telling you, this book is so jam-packed. Like, if you want all the details, read it yourself, because I literally cannot fill you in with everything, because it's just too much. But anyway, Pip puts in the password, and then she changes the password to DT Killer 6. Like, great. Like, real flattering. I don't know. I just thought it was weird. But there's only 8 messages between Andy and Harriet, and then they move to texting, and it's like all the stuff Harriet said, so it's like no big deal, like whatever. And then Pip searches around until she finds a draft that Andy had written, and this has a lot of information. So Andy's email draft, so she's sending, like, well, she didn't send it, but she wanted to send it from anonymous. So it's like, to whom it may concern, I know who DT Killer is, but of course she like does not tell us in the draft because that would be too easy. So Andy saw him holding hands and kissing Julia Hunter, that's one of the victims, obviously. That's probably Harriet's sister, is it not? Anyway, and 6 days later, she died. So Andy says she contacted because she was hoping that Harriet would also know this person and be suspicious of him killing her sister. And she didn't want to be alone in all this. Also, Andy mentions that she would be devastated if something or if anyone touched Becca, which is like obviously ironic because of the situation, because of what Max did to her, and then Becca, and because she was selling drugs, and then, you know, obviously Becca like let her die. It's a whole thing. But anyway, so Andy says that she wants to stay anonymous because this person is inside the house talking with us like everything's normal around the dinner table, and she doesn't want to go to the police because he's practically one of them. And then she says she can't tell Sal because she wants to protect him, and that's why she doesn't let him come to her house. So she mentions that DT is going to kill her if she doesn't leave town, and then he already started to look at her differently, and she doesn't want him to look at Becca like that. And that's why she's selling drugs, so she can save money to leave town. And then she also mentions trying to get into Yale at any means possible, which includes Mr. Ward, obviously, the whole plot of the first book. Also, she plans on coming back for Becca, and then the draft ends with just, like, it's cut off, like it's mid-sentence. Chapter 22. Pip's going over all the information with Robbie and basically how this changes everything but changes nothing, but it explains why Andy was selling drugs and why she was hooking up with Mr. Ward. Ugh, I can't believe I just said that. And then pretty much like the entire chain of the events for the last two books. But they do talk about how Daniel Da Silva used to have dinner at the Bell's house because Becca mentioned it back when she was dating Stanley, blah, blah, blah. They talk about it. It's actually in the other book. But he also worked for Greenstein, which is Jason's company or whatever, and is close with him. And then Andy mentioned that this person is practically one of them, talking about the police. And we know like he was a young officer at the time, et cetera, et cetera. I said I think it's too simple and more parties are involved. I agree. Still, to this day. Also, wasn't there a rumor that Andy and Daniel hooked up when she was underage? But so like that kind of changes. Like he looks at me differently. Like you guys already hooked up, so he would be looking at you differently. I don't know. Whatever. It's not Daniel. Spoiler alert. But yeah, the chapter basically ends with like recapping how everything's connected. Interview with Lieutenant Noel about DT. My first note says I hate this guy. Still valid. So, oh, it's Nolan, not Noel. Sorry. Nolan, he was the guy that interviewed Billy and arrested him. And he basically makes excuses the whole time and says he didn't lead Billy on. And he was tired too, but he didn't confess to murder. And he knew he was in the presence of evil. I'm not even saying Billy's like completely innocent person in general, but like we know he didn't do this. So it's really stupid. So they discuss the other evidence tying Billy to the victims. And we all know leads back to the job at Green Scene or whatever. So Lieutenant Nolan says they were looking at the business after the third victim was killed because she worked there. And then Pip asked if they had any other suspects. Pip brings up the weird occurrences that Harriet mentioned with the birds and the chalk figures. And he said none of the previous victims had mentioned anything like that. So, and like Billy didn't say he was stalking his victims or did anything like that. So they just assumed it was unrelated, which I guess is pretty valid. But anyways, then Pip's like, well, why would Billy throw away the trophies? Like, isn't that the point of a trophy to have it? And Lieutenant Nolan said he thought he was getting rid of evidence because they were getting too close to him or whatever. And then they talked about how it's common for serial killers to want to be close to the victims and insert themselves in the investigation. We already talked about this last time. Anyways, he mentions that there was an officer from a surrounding town, but Pip, like, assumes Fairview, that was showing a little too much interest. but he was just a new officer and very curious, but it did raise some red flags. And Pip's like, oh, was that Daniel Da Silva? And Lieutenant Nolan's like, I obviously like can't remember. And you wouldn't be able to air it anyways. And then like that's where the interview ends. Chapter 23. So Pip's asleep, having some super intrusive nightmares. Same girl. And when she wakes up, oh, okay, this is like stuff's gonna start getting like wild. So she wakes up to this sputtering clicking noise, and it's her printer just like printing randomly while she's sleeping, and it prints off, who will look for you when you're the one who disappears? P.S. I learned this trick from you, season 1, episode 5. Ready for my next trick? Reasonably, Pip is freaking out because DT like must have connected through her Bluetooth, which means he has to be nearby, and she's like questioning what my next trick means when her speakers from her computer start like blasting heavy metal music again, like via Bluetooth. So she like unplugs everything, like her computer, her lamp, her phone charger, like all of it. She unplugs everything in the room, and her like parents come in and they're pissed off, obviously. And like her brother's crying, like scared. And the dad's like, what the heck is going on? And she's like, oh, I don't know. Like it must have like my Bluetooth must have accidentally hooked up. My bad, whatever. But like she doesn't tell him what's going on, obviously. But she does like try to go look out the window just in time to see a man running away with like a dark hood on. So her parents like get her brother back in bed, but they're still mad, but they're like, good night, whatever. And Pip's like losing it because she knows DT was like literally in her driveway. Chapter 24. Pip's on the struggle bus again, obviously. She took the last of her pills, and then she texted Luke that she was out and needed more, and she said that he should have gotten back to her by now. So she's like annoyed, and she's like, what the heck's the problem? So she went for a run to clear her head, and now it's midday. Okay, like I know it's a lot of lead up, but it all makes sense eventually. So she's supposed to be checking in with Ravi like every couple, I don't know, like every hour or something, because he's like worried about her. And she's supposed to go eat dinner at his house and spend the night at his house that night, which I'm sorry, if I was in high school, my parents would not let me spend the night with my much older boyfriend at his house, especially when they didn't know anything was wrong. But maybe that's just me. So Pip has decided that all signs point to Daniel Da Silva being DT. It's not him. I've been saying this for like 2 episodes. But she decides that she needs to go talk to Nat about it, which is going to be an awkward and awful conversation because she's already accused them of being like involved with Jamie and all this stuff, and Andy and whatever, like not a good look. So she tells her mom, like, I have plans for tonight, quick bye, love you, whatever. So Pip's almost at Nat's house when no caller ID calls, like bring bring, oh my god, I should probably put a sound effect in. Anyways, she does the whole app thing, and then she like talks to the other line, and she's like, I got you figured out, I know you're DT, like I'm not scared of you, blah blah blah. And then, like, the real number pops up, but it's, like, a phone number she doesn't recognize, so she assumes it's a burner phone. Obviously, he's not that big of an idiot. So then Pip calls the number back, making her number pop up as unknown to, like, kind of mess with him to be like, hey, 2 can play this game, jerk. So when the phone is ringing, she can hear it right behind her. Dun-dun-dun. So there's no time to scream, and there's arms around her neck and throat choking her, and she can't breathe, and she, like, starts to pass out, and there's darkness. Chapter 25. So this is kind of weird. It's just like, I'll have to post a picture of it. It's on page 207. It's a stick figure drawn with no head, but instead of like lines, it's the word spelled out dark, like all over. Anyway, chapter 26. I'm sorry to insert this in such an important time, but my first note literally says, ah, all caps, I spilled water on my book, which I did, which made me very sad. But anyway, Pip wakes up in the trunk of a car. So she's pretty dramatic through this whole chapter, like reasonably so, but also like get to the point. But also like side note from me, which she does not do. If you're ever locked in the trunk of a car, you kick out the taillight. That's what you do. And then you wave your arm around. And then the other cars are like, what the heck? There's a hand waving around in this trunk. Anywho, her hands and feet and mouth all have duct tape on them. And the whole time she's like saying that she's in the back of Daniel's trunk and she's going to die. She's not in Daniel's trunk. Anyways, never let someone take you to a second location. If you watch like any true crime, you know that. Like, I think your survival rate goes down to like less than 1% if they move you to a second location. But anyways, she's like crying, thinking about the people she loves, and like thinking about who's gonna look for her, and she's like listing them, we all know. And then she's like rubbing her head and her face and stuff, trying to get DNA all over the car. So like, obviously, that's really smart. Anyways, she does this weird thing for like the next several chapters where she can quote unquote hear Ravi talking to her and telling her it's going to be okay. It's like her inner dialogue, but she makes it in Ravi's voice. I don't find it very effective. I don't really like it, but whatever. It's her inner dialogue, not mine. So her plan is to either push down the back seats or pop up through the cargo covering and climb over the back seats because she wants to try to cause a car crash because the odds of surviving a car crash is much higher than surviving like this serial killer. So Pip gets ready to jump out, do her plan or whatever, and the car is slowing to a stop, and DT gets out for a few seconds and then gets back in, and then the car starts moving, but it's like too slow for a crash. So she hears the parking brake knowing they're at the second location. So she's like, I'm dead. Great. So the door opens, closes, and she hears footsteps on the gravel, and they open the back door to the trunk, and DT pulls back the cover, and she looks at his face and recognizes, drumroll, Jason Bell, which I totally called in the first book. Or not in the first book, the first part of this book. But there we are, it's Jason Bell.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Chapter 27. So Pips tries to scream, but Jason's like, no one's going to hear you out here. We're like in the middle of nowhere. And then she tries to run, but her legs are obviously duct taped too tight together. And Jason leads her to an industrial-looking building, and there's a metal fence, and that's why he had to get out. He had to, like, unlock the gate and then get back in the car and then drive through, whatever. And they're at Green Scene LTD, which is in the middle of nowhere, like I said. And he drags her inside the building and places her on the ground so she's in a sitting position. And he points at the security alarm, and he's like, oh, that's the one you were asking about that went off the night Andy died. Well, Tara, one of the victims, was the one who set it off. And now, like, this is where all my victims were and where they were tied up, and they were murdered in this room. But Tara had managed to break through the tape, and he forgot to disable the security alarm correctly. But, like, don't worry, I got the cameras and everything turned off now. And it was all fine, but he had to rush back to the dinner party, which was, like, kind of inconvenient for him. So he also mentions that it's a weekend, so no one's going to be in the building till Monday. Can you imagine working somewhere where, like, a bunch of people were murdered and you had no idea? It's, like, the same as buying a murder house. But anyway, so he sees that Pip's bindings are too loose, so he starts duct taping her tighter. And Pip starts thinking about Andy, and because, like, Andy obviously knew her dad was this serial killer, which is insane. And then also, this is really messed up, but, like, Pip's talking about the pictures, like, when she took a picture of Andy's planner. And there might be a picture in the first book, but there's a hairbrush, like, laying next to it. And it's the hairbrush that must belong to Melissa, the other victim, and it was a trophy. And, like, the fact that her dad gave it to her is, like, sick. And I don't know, we don't know if Andy, like, knew that was a trophy, but, like, it is what it is. Gross. So anyways, he finishes taping Pip to one of the shelving units, and then he tapes her legs tighter or whatever. Then he begins to remove the tape from her mouth and says he normally gives them one last chance to speak and to apologize. And Pip debates on whether she's going to, like, scream or, like, ask him why or what she's going to do. But she lands on saying that she knew, like, that Andy knew who he was. And she goes on to explain everything in the email draft, basically that we found out earlier, and that she was trying to get out of town to save Becca. And then Pip also says, like, Becca doesn't know who you are, but she obviously chose to stay in jail than be around you. So, like, she thinks you're a monster in her own way. And then Jason says that Andy died because she didn't listen, just like all his other victims. But he, like, didn't kill Andy, obviously. And then he goes on this whole weird tirade about how women don't listen. He's a man and they should listen to him and show respect and blah, blah, whatever. And he also said he gave up the killings for Andy because when she went missing, obviously the police were too close. So he didn't actually give it up for her. He just is an idiot. Whatever. So then he's like saying how Pip was meddling in his business. So he had to take care of her because Pip's too loud. Like, that's what he always says. Like, they're too loud. They talk too much. Whatever. He would definitely murder me. Time immediately. He'd be like, number one victim. Look at her talking too much. So anyway, he goes on to say that he lost his second wife, the only woman who did listen, but then she started listening to Pip's podcast instead. Not sure why he didn't murder her, but okay. And then he also says that, like, Pip's telling him this about Andy, but it doesn't hurt him. And it proves that he was right, that she couldn't listen and neither can Becca. But he does have something that will hurt Pip. And I'm really sorry that we have talked about this and I don't want to, but we're going to. So last year, Becca wasn't replying to her text, so he went to his house, even though he wasn't living there with his, like, he was living with his new wife or whatever. Jason followed Becca and sees her with a dog on a leash. He's like, I didn't tell them they could get a dog. They didn't ask me. So he's furious. And this is obviously Barney, Pip's dog, but he didn't know that at the time. He just thought Becca got a dog or whatever. So he's like, Becca didn't deserve a dog. She couldn't handle a dog. And he confirms this because when she's like letting Barney go, she throws a stick and then she runs the opposite way while the dog's running to get the stick and leaves it in the woods. But obviously this is for Pip to find. So he's like, I approached the dog, a very friendly thing, and I drowned it in the river, which is like, gah, I don't want to talk about it. But anyways, he's like, I did this to punish my daughter. But then when I realized it was Pip's dog, it was a win-win. Lay a hand on my dogs and see what freaking happens. Like, I can't even, ooh, this was so hard for me to read. I don't even, like, I'm gonna be like, bleh. I can't even comprehend words. That's how I'm upset about it. Like, murder five women, I don't care. I don't mean that, but you know. But talk about the dog one more time, I'm gonna lose my brain. So anyways, Pip is screaming like, F you, and I would too if I could cuss on this podcast, because I hate it. But Jason's just like, see, you never listen, and like, time to wrap your whole head in tape. So he tells her to stop moving because she's ruining it. And then once he's done, he says, so now you can't listen or speak or even look at me. You don't deserve to. Which is weird because she can listen. So whatever. Anyways, the only thing exposed now is her nostrils. And like, Pip's kind of talking about how Jason took away her sight and she's left in dark and quiet. Chapter 28. So Pip hears the door shut and the car start, meaning like Jason left. But she's like kind of freaking out, like, oh my God, is he still there? Like, what the heck? But she does know it's the MO of the DT killer to leave before killing them. So he ties them up, leaves, and then comes back and kills them because they saw like the struggle marks on the duct tape and stuff, I guess. Anyways, so Pip's freaking out because she can only breathe through her nose, but she's starting to get stuffed up and whatever, whatever. But Ravi's voice in her inner dialogue is there to calm her down and have her think of a plan. And I literally hate it. I don't like it. I don't like the Ravi's voice thing. It just doesn't, I don't know. It just doesn't sit right with me. Anyway, Pip feels around the best she can to see if she can find anything. She doesn't, obviously. Pip plans to move her hands up and down the pole, or I guess down the pole to the intersection of the shelf to try to find a screw so she can use the screw to like cut through the tape. And this part takes freaking forever. Just read it yourself. I said that like 10 times this episode, but so long story short, she gets her hands loose on the pole. She's like moving back and forth, get them unstuck from the pole. And now she moves up and down, and then she goes down to the screw and there's a nut on the end. So she's screwing it off, whatever. It takes forever. Seriously, this is such a long chapter, but she gets the screw off the whatever. She pulls it out and then a barrel, like since now part of the shelf's loose, a barrel falls off and hits her in the shoulder. And this startles her. She drops the screw and it rolls across the floor. Great. Chapter 29. Pip's useless. No, that was just me saying that. So she's reasonably upset about dropping the screw, but Robbie's voice is there to tell her it's fine, like, whatever. So Pip can feel a gap between the shelf and the pole, I guess. So she thinks if she can, like, get the pole up, she can create a gap, and then she can, like, pull the duct tape from her wrist, like, out from under it, because she's, like, attached to the shelving unit. So Now all her running has come in handy because her legs are so strong. It's just trying to tie everything back together. It's really annoying. But anyways, she pushes herself up against the shelf and it gives way, knocking everything over. It's a whole mess. There's like fertilizer and stuff on the ground, whatever. And it's enough for her to slip her hands out from under and free herself. So then she takes all the duct tape off her hands and her feet and she's like ripping off her face and like part of her hair is coming out and like her skin, whatever, because duct tape, ugh. But now she has to figure out how to get out of the room. So she's locked in, obviously. The back door is locked, whatever. And this part's kind of haunting because she's looking for something to use and she finds the blue rope that Jason like had left there because he's going to come back and use it on her and kill her. That's how he killed all the other people. So anyway, she finds a toolbox and gets out a hammer and then she climbs up these shelves that are like kind of fallen over into a, like up to a tiny window, and then she uses the hammer to break the window, and then she climbs out the window and jumps to the ground, which isn't too high up apparently. Whatever, like it's all stressful when you're reading it, but I don't know how to like convey that. So the fence is too high to climb, so she goes the other direction back into these woods because there's probably not a fence around that, or it's like a smaller fence, and at least it's like far away from wherever Jason's gonna be. And as she's walking, she gets like far enough away so she drops the hammer like in the woods. I'd be holding on to that hammer for dear freaking life, though, if it was me. But anyway, so now she's like, I need to find a house and call the police. That's all I need to do. Tell them what happened. Like, a reasonable person, it'll be fine. And she goes, and then she, like, in her head, she goes in this whole thing about how the police aren't going to believe her because they already had the killer, quote unquote, like, Billy, who they think, in custody. And Jason's their friend and blah, blah, blah. And, like, Charlie Green taught her that she had to take things into her own hands and, like, whatever. So Jason's back, and because she can, like, hear his car, but, like, also I thought she was far enough in the woods, like, I don't know. This part's kind of weird, but anyway, so she turns around, walks past the hammer she dropped, grabs that. He's, like, unlocking the door to the storage unit. He looks in. He's like, what the heck? She hits him over the head with a hammer, like, a bunch of times, like, super overkill, and blood's flying everywhere, and then she, like, makes sure he's not moving. He's not twitching. He is dead. This is part two of the actual book, but obviously we're in part two of my episode. Part two, chapter 30. He's dead, Jason Bell, DT killer. Now, I have an asterisk. Now you call the police and show them all the evidence and say it was self-defense and the book's over, right? Like, he clearly abducted you at, like, some point. Your DNA is all over his truck. How would you get to his work business that's locked up, et cetera, et cetera? But Pip's trying to think of a plan now, so she's going to call Robbie for help. Yeah, let's drag the innocent boyfriend into this. That's smart. And why can't we just have the female character handle her stuff? Like, why does the boyfriend have to be her inner dialogue? Why does he have to come save the day? Why does she need a man? I don't really like it. Just figure out your own stuff. Like, I'm all for people helping, but, like, I feel like it's always, like, she's having a breakdown, boyfriend has to save the day. I don't like it. Anyway, it's kind of cliche. So this is the whole thing. She doesn't want anything traced back to him, so she uses Jason's burner phone that he uses DT to call her, and then she's gonna get rid of the phone eventually, and then she calls Robbie's house phone, so, like, even more can't get track to him, and then Robbie's mom answers and has some, like, awkward chit-chat conversation with her, and then she starts talking to Robbie, and she's like, she tells him where she is, and she's like, don't bring your phone, only use back roads so no cameras on the highway can pick you up, and, like, don't Google search where this is at, but, like, somehow figure out how to get there by memory and whatever, whatever. It's just a lot. Just read the book. She just doesn't want Robbie to be connected back to the situation. So Robbie gets there, and Pip explains everything. She was abducted, Jason's DT, everything we've gone over. Robbie wants to call the police like a reasonable human being. I will give him that much. But Pip's like, no. And then, like, they have this whole conversation, but Robbie gets on board because they didn't believe that his brother was innocent either, so blah, blah, blah. Police bad, they have to save the day. Cliche novel. I said it. So, they're gonna cover up the murder and frame someone else. That's, like, long story short. So, first, they have to clear the air, and Pip has to tell Robbie how she knows about burner phones and that she has one to get Xanax from Luke. But Robbie literally does not care because she just murdered a human being with a hammer. So I'm pretty sure her taking Xanax, which is, like, was prescribed to her at some point, is not that big a deal. I'm already out of breath. Like, this episode is really taking it out of me. So their plan is to manipulate the time of death. So Pip super explains it so it makes sense. But basically, in my own words, they need to cool down the body to, like, preserve it. And then they need to warm it back up to room temperature, or body temperature, or whatever. So it seems like, and they gotta, like, flip him over and stuff, whatever, because the way the blood congeals in certain areas. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. But anyways, they want to make it seem like he died hours after he actually did. So, like, he died, I don't know, like 6:30 or something. Maybe late. I don't know. I don't remember what time. Like, whatever, in the evening. And they want it to seem like he died in the middle of the night. But Pip's like, okay, but the police are going to need a killer. And they're going to look and look and look until they find one. So, we need to get one. So, they decide they're going to set up Max Hastings. Which, I have so many problems with this. But we'll get into that in my, like, lingering questions section. Because I don't want to, like, drown, like, the actual storyline right now. But get ready for me to vent a little bit. Chapter 31. 12 minutes is all it took to plan to set up someone for murder and how they're going to do it. That's pretty freaking efficient. So they're justifying the situation. They're like, well, they both deserved it, like being Jason and Max. And I think Robbie says something like, well, if I had to choose between you and Max, I'd choose you. Well, Gdursky, she's your girlfriend and Max is a rapist. But okay, like... You guys, I don't even know how to, like, explain how annoyed I am. So, they're trying to figure out how to cool down and heat up the body, so, like, looking for a fridge, because that's reasonable. Like, they're gonna be able to put a grown man into a fridge, but whatever. So, at one point, they're in the building, and they see a wood chipper, and Ravi, like, kind of wants to use it, which is absolutely horrifying. Think about putting a person through a wood chipper. And, like, talk about getting more DNA and evidence everywhere. Like, holy crap. But anyways, they decide not to do that. So... Pip starts freaking out because she remembers her DNA is all over Jason's car, which would, like, obviously lead the police to her, but also it would lead the police to knowing that Jason abducted her, I can't even form words, but anyways, they're gonna deal with that later at some point, and I think, like, they kind of land on, like, or they insinuate that they're gonna incinerate, they're gonna light the car on fire. Anyways, but this gives them the idea to use the air conditioning in the car and the heater in the car to achieve the body temperature situation, so they're gonna cool down the car because he has a new car, so the air conditioner is going to get cold enough to be like a fridge, and then they're going to heat it up somehow because for purposes of a book and this not being real, we're going to assume this would work. So they wrap Jason up in a tarp and they put him in the back seat, and that's like a whole thing, carrying him, whatever. And then Pip, like, takes her bag and stuff because obviously she had, like, a backpack when she was abducted, and then she leaves a hammer because, like, Max is going to need a murder weapon too, whatever. And then they head home. Chapter 32. So Ravi drops Pip off at her house, but she has to get upstairs fast because she still has, like, some blood droplets and her face is all messed up in her hair or whatever. But before she goes inside, she talks to Ravi about his side of the plan, which is on page 276. And I'm just going to read it because I didn't feel like taking notes on it because it's really extensive. So this is Ravi saying this. I'm going home to grab my phone, then driving to Stamford to pick up my cousin, use the highway so traffic cams pick me up, go to take out some cash from an ATM so the camera there also gets me, then we're going to go to IHOP or another chain and order food, pay with my credit card, be loud, draw attention to us so people remember us being there, take photos and videos on my phone showing us there, make a call to, probably to mom, to tell her what time I'll be home. I'm going to text you and ask you how your evening's going because I don't know you lost your phone yet and we haven't seen each other all day. Then we'll go to that bar where all my cousin's friends hang out, lots of witnesses, say until 11:30. Then I drop him home and drive back, fill up with gas on the way so another security camera gets me, go home and pretend to go to bed. Which, by the way, side note, why would he ask how Pip's doing when his other texts are like, where are you, I'm freaking out, like, he told people that she's missing already, so that would not hold up in court, but I guess we'll probably get there when we get there. So Pip goes into her house and it's all stressful because, like, her parents are there and she's trying to avoid them, but, like, just read it, whatever. So she gets all her clothes and then she, like, uses toilet cleaner to, like, bleach them, and she takes a shower and, like, she takes everything she needs for the next steps. And then she briefly tells her parents that she's going to go hang out with Kara instead of stay at Ravi's. And, like, her mom thinks her and Ravi got in a fight. Who cares? Whatever. She grabs some duct tape, which is ironic, obviously, but we'll get to that in a minute. And then she leaves in her car. Now, these next chapters are, like, pretty short, but it explains, like, kind of step by step what they're doing. Chapter 33. So Pip shows up at Luke's house and he's like, I don't have your stuff yet, you crazy person. And she's like, well, I'll just take as many rupees as I can for $100, which I think ended up being like six or something. Anyway, he also apologizes for not seeing her at the crosswalk earlier, like, or I guess the other day. And she's like, it's fine, whatever. Cause he, like, almost ran her over, I guess. I don't know if that's relevant or that was just supposed to, like, freak us out. And then it turns out to be nothing. Not really sure. Anywho, Pip takes 2.5 pills and crushes them up of the roofies because she needs to make Max unconscious, but not cause an overdose, obviously, whatever. And the chapter is saying there are three more houses in Fairview she has to visit. That's how it ends. Chapter 34. She gets to the Reynolds house, and Jamie, Connor, and Nat are all there, but their parents conveniently are not, for story purposes. Pip asks for their help and says they can never ask why, because they have to have plausible deniability. Basically, says she's going to make someone pay, and then, like, they all know that means Max. And, of course, they're going to help, including Nat, who does most of the work, but she was also, like, Max's victim. But this is stupid, because, like, okay, so say they help, say they get away with this, and then Max gets arrested for murdering. They're going to know that Pip set this up. Like, hello. Also, let's keep dragging a million people into this. Chapter 35. So the three of them and Pip drive to Max's house, and Max is there alone, convenient, because his parents are at their other fancy house or whatever, because there's emotional distress, Pip caused them, whatever, who cares. So this part takes a while, but Pip's like sneaking around the house, and she puts duct tape, like she comes around, she puts on the security cameras, the camera can't see her, because she wants, like, eventually the police to think Max put the tape on it or whatever. And then Nat rings the doorbell so she can distract Max. It's go time. Chapter 36 is our last chapter. So Max gets up to answer the door, and Pip's, like, sneaking around the house, and she's like, I might have to break a window, which doesn't really fit the narrative, but, like, I have to do this, blah, blah, blah. So she goes to, like, break this window, and she, like, pushes her hand on the handle in the back in the kitchen and just, like, opens. Great. Smart, Pip. Anyway, Nat talks to Max and is like, I want to talk to you about the lawsuit against Pip. And he was like, I didn't do anything wrong. Everything was fabricated. And then, like, she's obviously furious because she was one of his victims. And she knows the tape about Becca was, like, true and whatever. All while Pip is, like, trying to put the roofies in Max's blue water bottle that we talked about, like, all first episode that's sitting on the table. And Nat's like, I will go to court every day and make sure, like, you're accused, like, of what you did wrong and blah, blah, blah. So Max is like, I've heard enough. Like, I'm done. I'm mad. So he starts walking away. And Pip doesn't have, like, she's closed the water bottle, but she doesn't have enough time to get out of the house the way she came in. So she, like, ducks into this slatted door, like, where you can see out of it, under the staircase with, like, mops and stuff in it. And then Max is, like, walking back into the house, and he stops, like, right in front of the door that Pip's behind. Dun, dun, dun. That's where we're ending it today, and I haven't read ahead, so we'll see. I'm gonna guess he doesn't find her, and he drinks stuff and passes out. But lingering questions, which aren't even really questions, I'm just annoyed. I said, what the heck is going on, with a bunch of exclamation and question marks. There is so much freaking evidence pointing to Jason, at least, like, abducting Pip. Like I said, her DNA is all over her car. His car, sorry. She, like, the duct tape would have been enough evidence. Like, she couldn't have duct taped herself to the shelving and her legs and her feet and her face. She just, like, could not have done that. And then, like, she could have definitely called, like, self-defense. Like, he attacked her, he abducted her, like, and if she would have kept his burner phone, called her phone, like, multiple times over the course of, like, however many days. Like, I don't know why she doesn't just go to the police, because there is evidence, like, maybe not that he's DT, but that he is, like, did something, like, attacked her. Also, like, if she doesn't go to police, now the innocent Billy is stuck behind bars forever. That's justice. Thanks a lot for even giving a crap about this guy. Like, that really annoys me, too. Like, she had a chance to get Jason behind bars and free Billy, or at least try to. Like, I don't know. So, and even if Jason didn't go behind bars and got out or something, he probably wouldn't come after her again, because police be already, like, looking and suspicious and stuff. Like, this, like I said, I have some mixed feelings about this Max thing. Like, yes, he's a rapist. Yes, that is awful. Yes, like, I sympathize with people that have suffered that. Same. But that's not murdering someone with a hammer. Like, those are two different things. And, like, I think there should be justice for what he did. And, like, Pip's a freaking murderer, whether she murdered a serial killer or not. Like, she turned around and went back and killed him, which she did not have to do. She even says that in the book. Like, it was by choice. She was away. She got away. Like, she could have gone to the police and she didn't. So, like, why is there no consequences for her just because she's, like, our heroine and someone that used to be okay? Like, that's not acceptable behavior. It's just not. Like, she didn't do it in self-defense. Like, it's a mess. Anyways, my last kind of question is, like, why does Pip have to drag everyone into this, being, like, Connor and all them? Like, that's really... Don't ever do that. If you're my friend, don't drag me into this. I don't want to be a part of it. Like, that's a lot. I don't even have predictions. I'm just really annoyed. Like, I don't know. I have mixed feelings, because it's like, I like that we found out, like, halfway through the book, like the big aha, and I'm sure there's gonna be another one, but I don't like this whole like we're unreasonably to not telling the police for no reason. Anywho, in closing, thanks for listening. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube. I did that in a weird order. At the Jolly Reader Podcast. I also have a website, the Jolly Reader Podcast. Subscribe so you get notifications when new episodes are posted. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review because it helps other crewmates find this podcast. Share with everybody. Also, pet your dog extra for me because this episode was hard to talk about. Donate, which will help me buy books. There's a link in the show notes. Also, I started a Patreon, which you can donate through that, or you can do the $5 level and receive bonus episodes covering. I do like kind of like a yay and nay books I've already covered, and then I'm going to start doing movies related to books and maybe some shorter books like The Great Gatsby and such. If you like secondhand embarrassment, stay tuned for the outtakes, and I will talk to you next time for the third and final part of As Good As Dead by Holly Jackson. Until we sail again, this has been The Jolly Reader. Bon voyage! Hey, you made it to the outtakes. Let's do it.
Hello?
Louder. Hello. Ahoy. It only needed to go up one and we did it. How's this? Too loud? Ahoy. Ahoy. Okay, stop. That's a way to start it. Okay, stop. This baby fuzz. Bro. Okay. Just adjusting my sound on the... That's a little better. Okay. Hold on 1 second.
Hey, Allie, turn down the volume a little bit.
She asked permission to eat chocolate, and I said, just eat it. Okay, girl, shut the door for me, love. Thank you. Annie mentioned that Oh, sorry. Because I don't know why I have this. That sentence is weird. Anyways, she asked if there's any other suspects. Ready for my next trick? I said that weird. Crying and thinking about the people she loves.
Hey, Sunny! Sunny, go lay down.
Okay. And then, Plip, Pip.
I am Allie, and you are listening to my mom.